Hello, everyone. This is Eugene Starks, NAHU president. Welcome to The Jump Off, where we take a big leap into everything leadership and NAHU.
We are so excited to see you in Austin, Texas, for this year's annual convention held June 25th through 28th. What was that? You haven't registered for annual convention yet? But it's so easy. Just go to nahu.org and register now. Our keynote speakers this year will be Dr. Marty Makary, author and healthcare futurist, and Dan Clark, author, motivational speaker, and CEO of Clark Success Systems. I promise you that this is an event that you do not want to miss. So go register now at nahu.org.
Well, good afternoon or good morning, wherever you're from. My name is Emma Fox. I'm the chair of Chapter Leadership Development, and I'm thrilled to be hosting another episode of the Jump Off podcast with NAHU President Eugene Starks. And today, our guest is Reed Rasmussen, who I'm sure many people know, but just in case you don't, he is the principal over at Fresh Benny's. Eugene, you want to welcome our guest?
Well, I would love to welcome our guest, and Reed's hardly a stranger to you or me or Dan, or hardly a stranger to anybody, I think, with NAHU. That's why I feel about it anyway. He seemed to have been around. He always stands out in a crowd anyway, right? Just kind of look up and there he is. And he's always smiling and just having great conversations with people. But Reed, while I just said everybody knows you, why don't you still tell us, for those few that might not know you, a little bit about yourself. And just one thing, and I've known this for years, but you're not really originally from Texas, even though you're big like Texas.
I like that, Eugene. Correct. I'm big like Canada. So I grew up in Canada and I moved to the States 30 years ago. My degree was in health administration, and in Canada, that means you work for the government or a hospital. I worked for each for about a year, and then I skipped the border in 91 to Seattle. I was chasing a girl and I was chasing opportunity. The girl didn't work out, but I've come to choose America as my home and love being here. So I worked in Seattle. I ended up over on the HMO side, Group Health Cooperative, which today is part of Kaiser, staff model HMO. It was a good way to transition into the American system. Then I worked for the Blues for about 9 years. I ended up on the general agency side with a couple different companies. Found my way down to Texas about 18 years ago. And this is now my home. I'm not planning on moving any further south.
Well, you clearly found a girl somewhere in the process, too.
I did. Heidi is, when I moved to Texas, we got married and decided that we'd dated long distance from Seattle to Dallas. And I decided Dallas looked like a pretty great place to be, and a little warmer and great market, and have loved making it my home. And Heidi and I were married. And then in 2009, we decided to start Fresh Benny's. And initially, it was just me that was starting it. And then a couple and a half years in, she joined. And today we run the company with the rest of the team. And we're business partners now. So,
well, you've got, I know her well. You've got a great wife and a great business partner. I know she helps you a lot with your marketing. That was kind of her background, if I recall.
Yep.
And I saw one of your LinkedIn posts. I think it posted, I don't know if it was Friday over the weekend, where you're talking about utilizing your team members properly, using your account executives. And I even commented on it. I know this is advertising, but it's just great instruction and reminder to all of us to utilize our team and to work in our areas of strength. And I think that's something that you have learned to do very well. I mean, with your team, with your better half. What are some of, really kind of what are your strengths in with Fresh Benny's, and what do you count on other team members to help you with?
Yeah. The way we get the question a lot is people say, how do you possibly work with your spouse? They don't ask me that question near as much as they ask Heidi. So I'm not sure what that says, but I might say,
that.
Yeah. And I say, one of the important things was we took some advice from somebody who said, you got to define your areas of work. Now, why that's most important when you're a couple, as opposed to every single team of people we ever worked on, it's absolutely true. You can't just go into your coworker's office and start telling them what they need to do on their job when you're not doing things right on your job, right? it's just that much more enhanced when you're a couple and people think that it's not going to work that way. So in our area, I bring the background of the health insurance and the healthcare system, and I'm more of a strategist and more of a salesperson. So that's my areas. Heidi is, you called it, a marketer. She's great with words. She loves word scripting. She's a tremendous implementer and leader. So she's a great operational person. And we actually have a third person on our leadership team, Tanya, and she brings an incredible financial brain and a great strategist and a good creative as well. And so what the way we say it is between the three of us, we're Microsoft Office. I'm PowerPoint, Heidi is Word, and Tanya is Excel. And as much as we laugh over that, for those of us who know us, they all look and they go, yeah, you're exactly right. That's totally.
That just totally makes sense. Emma, I don't even know if I should even, what softwares are you and David?
I've been listening thinking, I had no idea, Reed. We've known each other for so long and I had no idea we had so many synergies. I'm also from a non-US country, right? I grew up in a completely different healthcare system. Socialized healthcare, universal healthcare. I also started out in the West Coast, down in Portland, Seattle's younger sibling. That's right. And I'm also in a marriage and a partnership with the same person. Maybe you and I, or maybe Heidi and I need to get together and do some strategizing around
some
that.
Counseling, maybe.
And this is one of the things I love about the podcast, and one of the things I love about spending time with our peers, with health underwriters, is you're always learning new things, because I really got my start really in the fire, as I like to say, with an HMO in New Orleans.
You're right. You did.
Yeah. And it was awesome. It was one of the fastest growing HMOs in the country. And I just learned so much. And my mentor, I'm going to be presenting in New Orleans in a couple of weeks to a business and industry expo. And hopefully my mentor from the HMO, Jane Cooper, is going to be there. We were texting this morning about that. So I'd forgotten, or actually, I don't think I ever knew you had that background, but.
I will say, I'll add this, Eugene, before you jump into the next question, because you'd asked the question of, how do we make sure that our team is working in their areas of strengths? And we considered it our job to continue to develop our people. And for many years, what we've done with our team is we've had a book of the quarter. And sometimes you get pushback from those couple people who aren't a fan of reading books much, but it doesn't matter. We're still all going to learn, right? And then you do it and you're like, man, that was good. And you pull out these different ideas and you build this language of leadership and language of success on your team so that everybody knows what it means to be a blue vaser. And if anybody's ever read the book, The Go-Getter, which is a fantastic book on pressing through with determination in a way like most people don't even talk about anymore. If you've read the book, you know what a blue vaser is. And if not, you should go buy that book and it'll take you no time to read. It's real quick and short. And you get this language of consistency. A year and a half ago, we did an employee survey. And one of the things that came out of that was one of the few things they said, we want to know that Fresh Benny's as a company is helping us as individuals work on our individual strengths. So we read StrengthsFinder, and then we did a couple of other books that were around helping people focus in on their areas of strengths and did some study of it as a group. On a team our size, you don't get to only work in your area of strength. All of us have to do all jobs at some point in time. But one of the things that a lot of companies are struggling, of course, right now with the Great Resignation, and are you engaging a population that wants to stay with you? And people will say, oh, the younger generations are just in a job for a couple of years and then they leave. And the data doesn't actually show that. It shows that those who are getting the kind of development they need in their job are not leaving those jobs necessarily. They are staying with organizations that they believe in, that they feel are bringing them the right kind of personal coaching and are helping them develop their skills. Because why would they leave that? Because that's what they're going to go and search for. I just wanted to bring that up early in the conversation.
Oh, no, that is just perfect. That's beautiful. I mean, it really does give some of the background of why Fresh Benny's has been so successful and why you're having fun. You know, y'all are still, all of you are young compared to me, right? But so is Methuselah.
Dude, we all want to be as fit as you when
well, that's part of it. But I tell people all the time and say, well, hey, are you thinking about retirement? I'm going like, oh my God, this industry has never been more exciting, more challenging. I'm getting to help so many young people, but so many young people are helping me. I mean, my mentors who all used to be older, I mean, I love David Contorno. I didn't always, but he challenged me. And I think, you know, my initial resistance was he was challenging me to think differently about what I was doing. And I'm doing some amazing things because of people like David. And boy, you know, what you just described, just I'm making notes as fast as you're talking to take back to my team meeting, because that's what we're trying to build. We're trying to invest in our team members.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you sharing that. Well, I hate to go from that exciting conversation to talk something as boring as AHU, right?
No. It's all a viewpoint.
But it's, you know, and it's really not, you know, that's tongue in cheek. But it's exactly that perspective that you bring, Reed, that I think you stood out so much as a leader within AHU and a leader among all the leaders of NAHU. I mean, when there's stuff we want to get done, we're always calling Reed. And I've called on Reed this year with me as the president, right? You're serving on this name change rebranding task group. And I really didn't have that as a scripted question, but all of this information you're sharing about this language of success and this language of leadership, you know, you took on that role. You're busy already with some other great leaders, but what are y'all trying to do in that arena right now?
Yeah. Some people who were at Capital Conference would have heard briefly that there's a group that is working to change the name of NAHU to better represent who we are today. And for those of you that'll be showing up at the National Convention, there will be a proposal to change the name. And I think virtually every one of us who's ever tried to explain to a peer of ours that's, you know, somebody we know that's in the community, and we say, gosh, you should come out to a NAHU meeting. And they go, well, what's NAHU, or whatever your local name is? You know, in my area, it's Dallas Association of Health Underwriters. And I go, well, it's the Dallas Association of Health Underwriters. And then before you can get into what it's really about, the very first thing that you have to say is, oh, well, first of all, it says underwriters, but we're not underwriters. It, you know, it's benefits professionals, it's insurance professionals. Here's who that is. And the term underwriter, you know, came up 80 years ago when the organization, when an underwriter was what a broker was called. And you're through this definition of just trying to define what the word means, and you've lost their attention. And I've told that story, that redefinition of who we are, thousands of times. And I find that it's always a speed bump to the conversation of, man, you should come out, you'll meet some people that are like we are, that are like-minded, they're working with some of the same issues. And it's a great group of people to be connected with, and you'll learn a lot and you develop yourself professionally. And I don't get to say that stuff because we're always just redefining our name. And so I know the story, you know, it's something that for my entire time of being in NAHU, we've talked about, is it time to update the name? And I used to think that it wasn't. And I have since come to realize, if we're ever going to really grow membership into the communities and let people know that we're inclusive and actually we are a place for everybody who's benefits or insurance professional, the name underwriters just has to come out of the name. And there'll be implications of that. And that's a lot of what the work group is trying to work through to figure out, okay, what's that going to mean for budget and marketing and a rebranding campaign to make sure that politicians know that change and that people locally would need that change. And then we'll put it up for a vote at National Convention, which is the members' national convention, is when you need to get approval of something like that. And then it'll roll out in the future if we...
Yeah, and I think all those are great points. And you know, you triggered my thought on that, because what we are really doing is redefining the language of leadership in our profession.
Right.
It's no small undertaking. And we understand sort of picking a name is kind of easy, right? I mean, there's a number of things, if it includes benefits, if it includes insurance, or if it includes healthcare, you know, if it includes professional or advisor, you know, yeah. If it includes some of those words, it's going to hit some of the right buttons, right? Because
way better than what it has been, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then a lot of your energy now and what it's shifting toward is, how do we message that? How do we build that language that, you know, it communicates understanding internally and externally?
And what the work group has to deal with right now is, how do we get thousands of members to understand why it's worth us making a change like this, and to come to agreement that, like you said, there's a lot of different names that would fit better than what the current name is. So once we land on what that is, how do we get some momentum and we don't have just a whole lot of debate that just cycles around for the next 4 years on what the name could be? or the new logo should look like, and everybody's got an opinion on it. But what we need to do is build some momentum fast enough that this doesn't become the biggest project we work on, because our organization has a whole lot more important things to work on than this.
Absolutely. We are working on so many important things. Absolutely. Right. So. I love that. And we could go on and on with this conversation. I do want to touch on one thing, and you refer to it as the diversity of our organization already. And I'm not just talking about male, female, black, white, which we're always striving to build that. I mean, I entered this association when it was the old man's club, right? And I'm trying to make it cool again. but I love it when I get him at a laugh. But
you're doing a good job, Eugene. You have made it cool. And I appreciate the fact that you're bringing up this topic, because right before I got onto this podcast recording, I was having a meeting with two newer NEU2 members, and we were exactly discussing the topic of DEI and what it really means, and how many of us are just checking boxes, right? We did that, we did that, we did that. And how many of us are actually truly understanding what it means to be representative of people that have diverse backgrounds or diverse experience. And I do think that the association hasn't always been quick to adopt new things that they haven't been used to. I know even Eugene has heard before, we often say, well, it's always been this way. Like, we don't want to change it. It's just like the name of NEHU. This is not the first time that we're discussing a name change, right? But it is the first time that we're doing something. And Eugene, I think that's really indicative of your leadership and a couple of the leaders that came before you too. So you make me laugh because it's true. You have made it cool to be part of NEHU again.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And I had no idea you were going to share that. But where I was going with that is yes, the diversity in all, when you look out and you see tall people and short people and all these kinds of people, but the diversity of our industry, Reed, 15 years ago, there was no Fresh Bennies, and I wouldn't have been talking.
Can you imagine?
You wouldn't have had a platform in NEHU. So yeah. It's that diversity I want to get at. Who is really supporting the re-engineering of the benefits and healthcare industry?
Yeah. The way you asked that at the very end there, you made me think about the diversity of the kinds of companies and unique innovative solution providers that are in our industry right now. And you're right. When I first joined, and it was 24 years ago, there were big medical carriers, there were big ancillary carriers, there was a few others from the vendor side of things. You're right. On the broker side of things, it was an old boys club. And there were a number of women who were working their way up the industry. There wasn't as much racial diversity even in the industry as there is here. Or it was in the industry, but it wasn't in leadership roles and big sales roles in the industry. And one, that's a shame. Here we are, it's 24 years later. We didn't move near as far as we should have. From the vendor side of things, there are so many new innovative companies that have started since I started being a member in NAHU. And you're right, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, the last decade has brought up a lot of unique companies. And I love that they're finding a home in health underwriters in the association. And there are far more women, far more racial diversity bubbling their way up into leadership roles in their jobs and their careers, and also in the leadership roles within NAHU. So I'm glad to see it. I think the value of having something like a DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Task Force, or there's even discussion about it, by definition, it pulls people in and says, okay, these guys are trying to make a place for me that I can relate and come there. I think one of the big benefits of having an inclusive population is that if a person at least sees their welcome, they'll at least open themselves up and find out what an organization is about. So it's sort of like a barrier to entry. Either they're going to feel like, gosh, I can't even go there. There aren't people that look like me or act like me. But once they get there, the real important thing is, do you inspire them once they're there? So it's not about that needs to become their reason for joining. That's their reason for even glancing in the room to say, are these guys interesting? But the key is, if we're here and we're getting stuff done and we're having an effect on the industry and we're developing people to be better leaders in their local community and we're helping them with build their careers and we're just having a blast while we're doing it. You know, Emma, your comment about Eugene being cool. Yeah, he's cool. But when you listen back to this entire season of podcasts and all of the other leaders that Eugene's been interviewing, as a whole team, the team is getting better at how do we inspire and actually achieve so much more. And it's not about one person being in the president's role. It's about this whole team of people and a consistency from year to year, because that's building more actual results, and those results are inspiring.
Yeah, we are building on values. We're not building on people. Used to be if NAHU had a good year, it's because we had a strong president that was maybe...
Strong personality.
Yeah, strong personality that can just move people. And now it's so much more than that. I mean, we certainly, you know, leaders, it's good when leaders have strong personalities. But if you're only building it on that, you've not left anything behind. I've used this analogy again and again, and I'm so proud of the work that we accomplished with QPAC and the tremendous success we had at CapCon this year. We raised over $200,000 at CapCon. And I just reflect back, the year I was chairman of QPAC, which was 6 years ago, we raised, I think, $86,000, which was unprecedented, shattered the goal. And of course, I was very proud of all that I'd done. Joke. But since then, what we had done, though, leading to that point, the year I was chairman, is we had totally rebuilt, reorganized, restructured how QPAC would work. Every year since I was president or chairman of QPAC, we've broken all the goals that we set, including this year shattering the goals. So, you know, Bill Hepscher's all proud, but hopefully he'll, and I know this, I'm picking on him. Bill knows this. I mean, Bill's success is going to be that we make $250,000 next year at CapCon. That's what we're building with NAHU. Yeah. Not a good year, but a great future.
Absolutely.
Well, and you're an important part of that. And I love this conversation. So, Reed, we really just got jumped right off into some deep discussions about NAHU and where we're growing and how it's going. But why did you ever get involved with NAHU to begin with?
My story is not that much different than others. I was working for Regents Blue Shield in Seattle at that time. I was broker relations manager. I'd heard of health underwriters, but I didn't really know what the association was about. And a broker invited me to lunch, and she explained to me that this was going to be good for my career. There'd be good education. I'd get a chance to meet more people in the community. And from a selfish standpoint, here I was a 30-year-old. I was trying to grow my role as a leader in the community. I knew I had a ton to learn, and she said this would be a great place to learn. And so I got involved. And isn't that so true of how so many of us, we didn't come because of some national ad campaign. We came because one person invited us. But for me, quite honestly, it was the very reason that it mattered. How was it going to help me? And how it was going to help me was it was going to help me grow into a better leader. And it was why I then joined her board. And then I went up through the chairs and was the president of the Northwest Washington chapter way back when. When I look at today, if I was a 20-something in the industry, and I don't care what agency I was working for or where inside the benefits industry I was working, there are things that you can learn by being involved with health underwriters, the association, that you're not going to learn elsewhere in your community. What it's like to work on a board. You look at the strategic planning process that every board does, like you're prepping yourself for future sitting on some corporate board and being a leader. You're prepping yourself to be a better employee for your employer in ways that you're not learning in your job. And I don't care how cool your agency is and you're working for some big brokerage, you're not learning that kind of skill of a professional association. And so the very reason that I joined is the very reason that people should join today. Learn to be a better leader.
Yeah. And I think it happens in so many informal ways by just being around and being a part of the board. And
absolutely. Yeah,
it may have been the first time you saw a business meeting run with parliamentary procedure rules.
It was exactly. You're right.
Yeah. But Emma, I mean, that's just a perfect segue. And, you know, you bring the right people on your team and then you get out of their way. And one of the things I just valued and appreciated the most about Emma is I told her, I want you to be chair of our chapter leadership development. Yeah. And I really didn't have to sell her. She knew that I wanted to change things. And I just told her, it's broke. I don't know how to fix it. Just do something with it. And then I got out of the way. And one of the things you're talking about, Reed, is a component that she's focused on. But, you know, I mean, share some of that, because you just said yes. And then I just got out the way and I've been just amazed with what you've been doing.
No, I love Reed's perspective. And I'm so glad and relieved to hear it, because we don't hear it enough that we're trying to find leaders for our spaces instead of creating space for our leaders, right? Which is what we really should be doing. And I've been around this circle for a long time, teaching people how to develop leaders. And the truth is, you have to give them a space where they can do what they do best, because they're going to start thriving and enjoying what they do. And it's just going to go from there. But when you were talking, it was reminding me of why we developed the mentor program, right? So that people like us who have it somewhat figured out, we've gone through a process. It hasn't always been this way. And it's so important that we connect, you know, some of NAHU's biggest leaders with people who are just coming in, so that they do have someone to lean on and they do know how to handle the mistakes that they'll make along the way. And that's what leadership development has been about this year, is how do we develop the people, not necessarily the organization, because once we get the people developed, the organization will take care of itself because the people will take care of it. And I don't think that that's been a big focus for a long time. So I'm thrilled to hear you talk so passionately about the topic, because it's how this association is going to grow.
Emma, look at when I first met you and you were first around the association and how much you've grown since then. And as you look back, you're like, well, it's pretty clear. Like, I know that you would say it was a lot of the exposure that you got here and the relationships that you met from it. And then those relationships became actual work relationships and a marriage relationship and things like that. But it's not just you and me uniquely on that. Like, there are thousands of people that their story is exactly the same.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, I will give a little shout out to some of the chapters who have really embraced exactly what we're discussing today. You know, we just had the California Association that hosted the Women's Leadership Summit that was all about building a platform to develop leadership skills in people by sharing stories that are so, so similar. And you never know until you talk about it that the path you're on, it might be a little different. It might look a little different, but we're all eliciting the same feelings around it. I'm excited that Eugene and I have some discussions planned to talk more about this topic. And it's exciting to be not to be on the platform, because I don't think any of us belong on it, but to give it to the people who need it to speak on it is truly a privilege, I think.
Absolutely. I love it. That's exactly right. I just love that perspective. And what we've tried to do with the podcast is to put people on the platform that are in leadership roles. From, you know, the last conversation with Kelly Fristo, he's about to be president, much to my relief, you know, or people like some of the, you know, Reed's not in any formal national leadership role at this point, but he's still continuing engaged in key leadership positions for us. I always say, if you see a turtle on a fence post, you know he or she didn't get there by himself or by herself. And that's our job, is to put the turtle on the fence post so people can see what they have to offer. Well, Reed, this is a great conversation. I want to kind of give you a shout out, but I want you to give me a little bit of what was your motivation, because Reed, Capital Conference was just a few weeks ago, and you posted on LinkedIn, the best summation of our priorities, our legislative priorities and our policy priorities. You summed it up so well. I mean, I literally listened to it repeatedly. And in some of the chapter meetings I've been in going around the country, I'm literally reciting the way you summarized Capital Conference. How'd you get that strong takeaway? What motivated you to share that?
Well, for those of you that have never attended Capital Conference, one of the things that when you go, you get a couple of days of training from the legislative team about here are the handful of priorities that we need to take out to our legislators. And the first time you go, you're very intimidated because you don't know at all what you're going to say. And then you realize, oh, the training is right here. Here's the summary of the priority issues. So every year that you go, you're going to get this summary. And in the past, what I've done is in the last maybe 6, 7, 8 years, one of the things I did is I do maybe a blog post or an article afterwards summarizing it. And it wasn't that difficult to summarize because Nahu gave you the list of things that were the priorities. So you could just write about them and describe them. And a number of times I've done a webinar afterwards. And some people attend that webinar just to get their own summary of it or my take on the summary of it. Usually a few hundred people would sit on that webinar. And mostly it was people that didn't go and they were looking to hear what are the legislative issues of the day or at times Medicare. I've always spoken a lot about free market healthcare versus a public option or a Medicare for all kind of approach. And so that was always kind of hot. And what I've noticed in the last few years is people don't want to sit in on a 1 hour webinar. They're not even reading blogs near as much. What we all are doing is watching social media and 2 minute videos. So I started this, my version of a video podcast called Brokers and Cars Getting Coffee. And then we started to do some smaller versions to do some education that were clips of 2 or 3 minute videos and found that last summer we did this. And instead of having a 1 hour presentation for some of our Fresh Benny's product stuff, we did a set of small 2 minute videos. And instead of having a few hundred people, 300 to 500 people listen in, we've had over 100,000 views on those videos. It's connecting with people. And so it's watching what changes occurring in the way people are consuming information. So I thought, well, instead of me writing an article on what I learned at Capital Conference, I think it's time to just try to do a little summary video. So as far as what was said, it was what Nahu taught me that week. And then when I was pulling it together and after having done some different videoing, I thought, well, have a good background, have something that's interesting. Oh, you know what? Maybe I could do it in a few different places. So I did it in front of the intro is in front of the Capitol building on the night, right at about the time that the State of the Union address had just changed. And in fact, I was filming it. And when I do a film like that, I literally segment that's about 30 seconds, I'm just doing it off the cuff. And so I record it like, you know, half a dozen times until I get it right. Well, one of those times when I was in front of the Capitol, the president's motorcade comes by and photobombs me and they and about 15 police cars are driving by. And I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of funny. That did not make the final.
And then I did it in a few different locations.
Yeah. I did one in front of Lincoln and one in front of Roosevelt and one in front of the Washington Monument. Why? Because when I thought about what's going to keep a person listening long enough is a little bit of variety, a little bit of humor, a little bit of change. And you know what? 20,000 views later, a few people are listening to what we did in Capital Conference, and it's better than if I wrote a blog. So,
well, that's awesome. I so much appreciate you doing it. You summed it up so well, and I knew so many people were seeing it that did not have a chance to experience it. And I'm hoping Dan's making a note too. I mean, one of the things I say about NHU is we do great things. We just don't tell the story very well.
We've got better to get better.
Yeah, we've got to get better at telling our story. And we're going to use some people like you and Emma to help us tell the story. So you just shared some great stories today. I just cannot thank you enough for being a part of this, for being a part of NAHU, for answering the call from the broker that said, why don't you come to an NAHU meeting? And as they say, kind of the rest is history. And of course, we're still writing history. But I can't thank you enough for all you do, for your friendship, and for just the things I know you're still going to do.
I appreciate having a visit here. Thanks for that. And thank you to the association for how much the association's taught me over my career. I wouldn't be where I am without it.
Great.
I echo that.
Thank you, guys.
Have a great day.